Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and evening, everyone. This is Carl from the ISF and Carl's Cavern. We're going to be doing tonight a commentary watch of a very, very special movie. But first, I'd like to introduce my co-host and co-commentator for tonight, and that would be Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Oh, where's the energy?
I am working on it, man. It is a lazy Saturday afternoon. I've been cleaning a pile of weird random toys in a kid's room all day. But, yeah, it's a good afternoon to watch this movie. One of my favorites. It definitely helped get me into incredibly strange films. I will say that.
Mm-hmm. So of course, today is May 1st. And May 1st is a very, very important day for the Deviant Legion because this is where we do our memorial to Sergeant Howie. Sergeant Howie passed away this day, supposedly. We never completely guaranteed that happened, but we all figure that it was today in almost 50 years ago, in 1973. So we got some archival footage that we'll be watching, and of course that archival footage is called The Wicker Man, and it is the original Wicker Man with Christopher Lee, Edward Woodward, Diane Cilento, Ingrid Pitt, and many, many others. But a wonderful, wonderful film. I also want to give Doc's blessings on this memorial. He was unable to join us because he's not feeling well today, and I told him to go and just rest up. So please keep Doc in your prayers. This is something that happens every so often to him, but it's not exactly pleasant. So he you know, just keep him in your prayers. He'll be fine. And so, Rachel, let me ask you something. When was the first time you ever saw this movie?
You know this story, but okay. So I was homesick as a youth. So I was probably 12 or 13, and I was rooting around through my dad's video collection. He had a really extensive tape collection, but a lot of them were recorded off of television, so I was looking at the ones that just had title pictures on them. And I found The Wicker Man, and I was like, okay, well, I know a little bit, you know, about the history of The Wicker Man and the festivals and things, because like I've mentioned on the show before, I do have a lot of pagan affiliates in my life that I've grown up with, and so I know a lot more than the layman about pagan traditions especially. And so I just popped that one in, and I just sat there dumbfounded, because at that point in my life, I had never watched a movie that was so slow but so riveting. And I mean, just, I knew what was going to happen. I absolutely knew what was going to happen. And I knew that because I knew these stories of these rituals. And it's just like, no spoilers here, guys. I guess I should say, even though this movie's a bazillion years old. But, I mean, I even recently found out that this was actually based on speculation about what happened to this real-life person, Sergeant Howie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I did not know that. So the first time I watched it, I was just fascinated with it. And I, for whatever reason, forgot to put the tape back on the shelf. And by the time I moved out many years later, it ended up in my possessions. Unintentionally, completely unintentionally, but almost 20 years later, I was on this podcast, actually, a few months ago, And my dad was listening, and I didn't think anything of it, and I told the story about how I accidentally stole the Wicker Man. And, you know, that's like my ISF badge of honor right there. I accidentally stole an original VHS copy of the Wicker Man. And my dad called me right after the show and was like, I've been wondering for 20 years what happened to that tape. So, yeah, I have a little bit of history with the movie beyond just I really like it.
Well, for me, I first saw this at the drive-in. This was like the third feature of a set that Howard got. And so basically what happens at drive-in, you play the third feature, then the main feature, then the second feature. Okay? So this was the first one happening, and this was in October, I think, or it was definitely at the end of the season. I was just like blown away. Then I saw it on HBO not long after. And the version that we're seeing is the theatrical version. It's the 89-minute version. It is not the preferred version, unfortunately. One of our guests, who I've had on the podcast before, and I will get him scheduled at one point or another in the future, is John Alan Simon. John is first started out as a film critic, then a preservationist, and then a film preservationist, and then also is now directing and producing. And he is the person who tracked down the 110-minute version. And he is responsible for finding the long version of this that was long thought lost. So you know, you have John to really thank for that. This was my first introduction, really, to Edward Woodward. I did not see Callan till years later, but he is magnificent in this. This is Christopher Lee's best role ever. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And just for posterity's sake, I do have to say it's one of Nick Cage's worst roles ever.
Yes, but that doesn't exist. I'm sorry. That doesn't exist. That version does not exist. I know it does, but it doesn't. But this is a wonderful film. There's just so much to it. And I find it to be one of the more truthful versions of pagan worship. Now, there's a lot that isn't truthful, but yet maybe what I'm trying to say is somewhat sympathetic. I mean, you know, and that, and it's a balance.
Although it is somewhat stylized. It's a somewhat stylized representation of basically a religion that a lot of people know absolutely nothing about except for wild conjecture. And by wild conjecture, I mean wild. I mean, most of the pagans I know just want to do exactly like they do in the movie. Well, for most senses, just occasionally dance around naked in the woods, sit around hugging crystals, you know, go plant things and pet dogs and shit. It's not this crazy human sacrifices and drinking blood and all of that kind of stuff.
No, and this is one thing. I actually, one of my closest friends and someone I spent a year with, living with recently, Rich Wandel is a head of a circle and pagan. And he knows the film quite well. We've talked about it, and he has real issues with it. But he still says it's probably the most realistic depiction on film of pagan, and particularly Celtic pagan. Because, you know, you talk,
that's a distinction,
you know,
a lot
talk
of
about
don't make.
The Wicker Man or Beltane or the Green Man. These are all Celtic symbols as opposed to like Eastern European pagan, which is much, much different.
I mean, absolutely. And I believe that that's a really important specification to make when you talk about paganism, is very much a regional and a division of the sect that you choose to follow, because there's so many different versions. Like my godfather, he's a druid. He's basically just a giant tree wizard. He just wants to, you know, be in his mother nature and do his thing and respect the earth and all the animals, and that's what he does. Now there's other, you know, sects of paganism, like, you know, Wiccan, that, you know, people tend to believe more that they can, you know, affect the world through, you know, intentional magic and things like that. And, like, there's so many differences. So even if you do see a movie depicting, you know, what we're about to see, and we say that it is a one of the more accurate representations of a lot of the pagan rituals, do understand that we are not saying pagan people are going to kill you or anything like that. Most of them don't do things like that, so we're not saying that that is all pagans. Not all pagans, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and the thing about, you know, regional. For example, I grew up with a lot of Eastern European influence. So things like there's a film on Shudder called November, which is very, very much Eastern European pagan. And you have klots, and you have all these things that are much different and much more, you know, mythological, and you know, or Norse gods or whatever the case would be. But here, you know, we're talking about particularly Celtic and English paganism, and May Day is a very, very important day. That's very much about, you know, the grains coming back and everything, and that has a lot to do with what we're going to watch.
Actually,
so go ahead.
No, most of them refer to it as Beltane, which is
right.
Actually today. And it's kind of like low-key considered pagan New Year. Like a bunch of my friends, my feed exploded this morning with everybody going, Happy New Year! Happy Beltane! You know, all of that. So, yeah. But that is what they're celebrating, is the New Year, the rebirth of the world.
Mm-hmm. And so talking about rebirth, we're going to be doing this again. I have been doing commentary on this film or talking about this film every May 1st for the last 8 years, and I plan to continue until I'm in my grave. In fact, I was talking to Vicky, my ex-wife, today, and she says, you do this every year. Why don't you just stop? I said, no, I'm not going to stop. So we're going to now be ready to start the film. Now, for everyone, it's on Amazon Prime. Okay.
Free to watch if you have an account.
And we have it about 20 seconds in,
exactly,
which is where you – hold on. Where you see the red background with a black square. That's the beginning of the British Lion thing. So bypass the Studio Canal and go to the British Lion. We'll give you a couple seconds here.
Yeah, Carl and I both – have ours queued up to the exactly 20-second mark.
Right.
But, of course, we want to be totally on sync with each other so we're not getting audio feedback in the background.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm going to just check my audio for a moment. I'm going to cut that down because I do want the audio on so I can hear it, because one of the great things about this film is the soundtrack, which is just absolutely magnificent by Paul Giovanni. Okay, so you should be at 20 seconds, and we're going to start now. I'm going to do a countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then go. Okay? So everyone be ready here. Okay? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Done and done.
And there's the British Lion.
There we go.
Now, of course, you know, I think it's wonderful that they give a credit to Lord Summer Isle and the people of the island off the west coast of Scotland for this privileged insight to their religious practices.
I mean, I thought it was pretty fantastic, too, especially considering when mm-hmm. this was made. Not exactly something people were running around thanking you for telling them about.
Right. One of the things about this, and Christopher Lee tells a story where he's with director Robin Hardy and playwright Anthony Schaffer, and they talk about the film, and Christopher Lee asked what's the title, and they say The Wicker Man, and Christopher Lee looks at him, oh, so it's a film about sacrifice. It's like, damn it.
You ruined the punchline, buddy.
Yeah. Now, to give you an idea, when this was released, British Lion had just been bought up, and this had already been in process. And the person who bought British Lion thought both this film and Don't Look Now were duds. So they hooked them up as a package and sent them out to drive-ins and didn't even release it. And of course, As I said before, I actually saw this at the drive-in. So this was the first feature, and then Don't Look Now. You talk about 1-2 punch.
Damn. He's such a lucky bastard for working there.
Yeah, seriously. Had a major impact. But here you see the everything there and the greens, and of course Edward Woodward was not their first choice for the lead. However, he was very big in Britain at the time because he was in a TV show called Callan, which was a spy show, and that actually is a really great show. And I recommend it to everyone. But this was my first introduction to him, and I was just, I was aghast at how good he was, because I had no idea who he was. And of course, as you go on and you go to a number of the other films he did, he also was a great singer. And starred on Broadway and was up for a Tony for High Spirits back in the 60s.
I've seen that one.
Yeah.
I said I've seen that one. High Spirits, probably not with him, but, you know.
The Dingy. I always thought a dinghy. What the hell is a dinghy? I thought that was the thing between my legs. But no. So what you're seeing here is the first scene, but actually, and the long version, there's a prelude with him at church receiving communion. And one of the things you have to understand is you've got this dichotomy of a very, very proper Catholic view of religion as opposed to pagan. And so it's this comparison that you see throughout the film.
Well, there's also just the blatant dichotomy, not just the you know, intended, but there's that he is a stodgy, you know, city police officer with obviously staunchly different morals, and then this town of, you know, tiny, very sequestered people. I mean, they don't hammer it in your face, but, like, they're really making sure in this movie you understand that a lot of this is discrimination, and it's honestly, it's not discrimination against the police officer. It's really highlighting what's going on with tiny towns of people that are like, we don't want you here, go away.
And the interesting thing here, too, is that Edward Woodward, as he was cast, and you see this, he's not exactly a likable person.
No.
And no, he's not. He's very officious. He's very, in one way, he's very stupid. And we'll get to that, okay?
Yeah, I was waiting for my comments on that.
Yeah, we'll
get to
that.
You know I'm going to have
to. Oh, yeah. We'll wait until the scene. Until the scene. But it's this thing here is now a number of these actors too were not actors. They were actually people who lived in the town and were given a couple of.
I thought that was cool. I think a lot of the people that are performing some of the rituals you see in this movie are not actors. They're actually, you know, allowing a glimpse into how they legitimately do this, and they really are the people from the town that do these things.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that really hit me about this particular movie, and I've never seen it before, and we're coming up to it here, is that you think of a movie, you know, what is this? This is basically a folklore, but it's also a lot of other things. And one of those things absolutely floored me.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, being 11 or 12 when I saw this, this could have been one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Look at all that awesome, snacky shit.
Oh, are you kidding? I'd be going to that store like every friggin' day. You know, I'm not just a cheese junkie. I'm a chocolate junkie, too.
Oh, see? And I'm one of those weirdos. I can't do chocolate as much. But I really like interesting candies. Just weird stuff. And it looks like she's definitely got some weird shit in there.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh.
So go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Well, now you're seeing the pictures of the March hare. And he's realizing that, you know, they're teaching something to their children that he doesn't agree with. And that's where a lot of the officiousness and that comes to comes to bear here.
Although it seems like she's already, like, fucking with him because she gave him the thing to fill in the ears in gray, but they're on the other side.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the locations here were in Scotland. And Kirkcudbright, Dumfries, and Galloway was where they filmed this.
You know, I guess if you have one area full of rolling, beautiful hills and forests, you've got another. They all look the
Absolutely.
Same to me, right?
Ah, the Green Man Inn. Another.
I was going to say that.
Yep, another major, major personage in Celtic theology.
Yep. Definitely.
Notice that nobody, everybody stopped.
They didn't just stop. They did fucking stop, like, record scratch.
Yeah. The other thing is I love to look at the people's faces. They're not, you know, a lot of it is older. If you notice the one musician in this that you'll see. Oh, there she is.
Uh-huh.
There she is, Britt Eklund and all her gorgeousness.
I'm sure she was everybody's first choice for this role. So, yeah.
And now it's a musical.
Oh, I always love that song, too. That look of just mild bemusement that all the townsfolk have in the background is something that kept me watching. I knew. I was like, there is something happening.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that his mouth was just painted on in a straight line. It only opens when he has to say words, but it doesn't actually move, I don't think.
Well, you know, that was one of the things that Everard were talks about in the commentary and in interviews. Was that he made it a point that Sergeant Howie was extremely officious and very, very cut off. In the longer version, you find out he does have a fiance. But they've never consummated the relationship. And, of course, that comes into play here.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure here. Like, no, I know I've seen the longer version. I was just trying to remember if that was, couldn't have been the first version I saw. But, yeah, the version I remember is the longer version. So this might be a little bit jarring for me.
Yeah, as I said, this is the theatrical version that was released in 73. It was cut down because British Line, the people at British Line, figured it wasn't worth anything. And when representatives for Roger Corman came in, they decided not to buy it. And that's where the longer version actually ended up. Roger Corman had a version of the 110 minutes. But then they just released it, you know. But here you see the pictures of the harvest, and suddenly 1972 is not there.
I sent it back to get it resized. Yeah, that's it.
Yep. And his look at the... Now, I have a question for you, Rachel. Was this the first time you ever saw Edward Woodward as an actor?
Probably, but I wasn't really focused on, you know, who the actors were back then.
Right. You got some beer fuzz on you there, Edward.
Yeah, I mean, like, already every interaction he's had with the townspeople has been, like, really, I mean, I can't quite go so far as to say vicious yet, but there's already, like, this seething in him, this absolute, just dripping with disdain, seething for these people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Now, this is a major, major, okay, point here.
Yeah. So now he's really freaking out because he just walked into the wild wood orgy.
Yeah.
Like everybody in town. And we wonder if he's freaked out because he's, like, secretly jealous, maybe?
Well, you know, that's part of it, too. Now, one of the things here is you get to see...
their devotion to each other?
Yeah, but the other thing, too, of course, is Christopher Lee comes in. And he's completely freaking out.
Because he can't go anywhere. He's got to figure this shit out. So he's
right.
Stuck in this, you know, wild, hedonistic town that doesn't even have any fucking apples.
Now here you see him doing his prayers. And there they have they threw in the scene, just little snatches of it. I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Now, being a church musician and being very, very much a liturgical person, being Episcopalian, these scenes of the service I really connect to. But the difference between me and Sergeant Howie is that I'm much more open to other viewpoints. And this is part of what is his downfall in many ways, because he's not willing to see different ways.
Right. And, you know, you can't deny that the guy gets pretty manipulated. By the way,
yeah.
I always thought this was such a beautiful scene, by the way. And not because there's a gorgeous naked woman in it. Like you were talking about earlier, the soundtrack in this, like, I've got goosebumps right now. It's so pretty.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So what you have here, now I will say this, when you see her from the behind, that is not her.
Okay.
That is a body
Why
double.
Is that? So she has no problem showing her boobs, but there's something wrong with her butt?
I guess so, but it's definitely a double. But here, this is what I was saying. If I am Edward Woodward and there is a naked woman trying to seduce me, from the other side of the door, I'm going to tell you something. I'm opening up the damn door.
I mean,
yeah.
Dude, she's not even trying to seduce, honey. She is throwing herself at him.
Yes.
Through a closed door, mind you. But still, they hardly know each other. She's got to be a little discreet at least. So, you know, she'll put a door between her naked prancing, but she will sing him a very sexy song about it.
No.
Yeah, I guess that's the difference between you and him. He did open the door.
Right. Now, that is a definite
bubble. You would have kept it open.
Oh, I would have gone through.
Right.
Without a doubt.
Especially if she promised to keep singing. That'd be awesome.
Gotcha. So well shot. Now, we got to talk about the director. The director is Robin Hardy. Robin Hardy only directed 3 films in his whole career. Okay, and this is one of them. And this is the big one.
Yeah, okay? Obviously.
This is the big one. And he also did a follow-up years later called The Wicker Tree, which is not bad, but it's not this movie by any means. But
that was definitely a body double in there, by the way.
Right, absolutely. So it's the other movie he did was called The Fantasist. But those are the only 3 films that he ever did. He did get a writing credit on The Bull Dance. But basically, this is all he did as far as film is concerned. He was a theater person.
Maple.
Yep. Okay.
And a lot of people doing those today.
Absolutely. As well they should.
God, have you ever done one of those? It's the most confusing shit.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with this cut.
What's that?
Well, it does jump around a bit.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, does that stop you? Aye.
So, is anybody else getting, like, really big Daniel Craig vibes from his face?
Say that again?
Is anybody else getting, like, vague Daniel Craig vibes from his face?
Yeah.
Like, I'll be honest with you, though. When I was a kid and we used to have to do all those Civil War demonstrations and do the maypoles and stuff, I hated it so much. It was always so pretty, and I wanted to do it, but I could never do it right. And I'd get pissed off, and I hate the maypole.
Where are you, by the way? What time are you on?
Um, 24:49.
Okay, thank you. Mine froze up. Again, a musical, and this is so well designed, and just, I love it.
It's really well integrated. It doesn't feel like a musical where they sing just random shit just to be singing random shit. It really feels like these songs are more part of their culture and their ritual.
And they are. Music is one of the things that Robin Hardy, when he was doing the adaptation and writing this, was to really look with him and Anthony Schaffer at what the traditions were. And music was a huge part of it. And now we have Diane Cilento. Now, Diane Cilento, wonderful actress. You see her in a number of films.
Yeah.
It's the image of a penis. Yeah, he's not really happy with that either.
Oh, no, he's like, what is his blasphemy?
Yeah. One of the problems that I do feel the Christian church and the Catholic church particularly have is basically abhorring natural sexual tendencies. Or even what they consider unnatural, which aren't that unnatural, by the way. And I find this hang-up about sex to be a huge, huge difficulty that I've had to come to terms with. That's one of the reasons I'm a Episcopalian, because generally there isn't that hang-up. I was actually at an Episcopalian church and helping out someone who was doing the teenage class, and he was giving out condoms to his kids.
Hey, man, the lack of sexual education leads to so many problems in the world that people, like, I can't even get into all of that. We'll have to have a completely separate show on sexual issues in society.
And the thing is, he's definitely being lied to, and he knows it.
Oh, yeah.
He knows it.
He knows it. And they know it.
Yeah.
And so the question you have throughout most of this movie is, are they stupid because they think he's stupid enough not to notice this obvious stuff? Or is he stupid for not figuring things out sooner? Like, I mean, he's really trying, but I don't know. He's got so many limitations.
Right.
It's kind of, gee, Rowan Morganson doesn't exist. So, yeah, that look.
Yeah, he calls them liars right here, too.
Pickable little liars.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. The maypole doesn't represent a penis. It represents Mayday fun times. Good day.
You know, they having spent so much time with this friend of mine who is the head of the circle, I find it wonderful in terms that they connect, at least this particular circle, to the ancient ways. And that's part of what paganism is. It's a throwback to the way that we used to worship in pre-Christian times and pre-Jewish times. And, you know, what I always say is that everybody who worships, whether you're Christian, Muslim, you know, Jewish, whatever, we try to do the best we can. But none of us are perfect, and none of us know. But just in this, well, I was just going to finish up and say, just in the act of worshiping, we give credence to it. Okay, go ahead, Rach.
Oh no, that's it. You keep going. Now she actually just had that great speech about, you know, well, you would say so maybe, but you know, we don't use that word here.
Yeah, this year we like to call it reincarnation instead of resurrection.
Yeah. She's just so coy, like, he's not good at dealing with double speaks, apparently.
Yeah.
I like that arbor.
Oh, absolutely.
I was not aware that serpents ejaculate.
Yeah.
God, now I can never forget that. Jesus.
This is what happens when you watch this at 12 years old and you miss a lot of this shit.
Well, I mean, I grew up with a lot of the people in that community. Oh, they had apples. So I actually knew a lot of the mythology the first time I watched the movie.
Mm-hmm. And he makes a makeshift cross.
Yeah. It's such disrespect, too. Like, it's okay for him to hate their religion, and they're, like, still totally being cool with him.
They're just going about their day. Now, that is Aubrey Morris. Aubrey Morris was in a bunch of films. And I'm getting to him in a moment.
Yeah. So creepy. That you wouldn't, like, put it in the ground to fertilize, you know? Why would you hang it in the tree? So, yeah, what you're saying right there is totally an umbilical cord on a tree.
Right.
Sapling, right.
Now, Aubrey Morris was in A Clockwork Orange. He was in The Wicker Man. Let's see, just a moment here. Died not too long ago, 2015. He was 89 years old. But, man, he was in bunches of stuff. You go back... The Adventure of Sherlock Holmes, Smarter Brother, List of Mania, Love and Death, the Woody Allen film. But you see him a lot.
Yeah.
He was in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the BBC series.
Yeah.
Life Force.
I thought I am the authority.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, now you have Ingrid Pitt. I mean, I got to say, boy, did they have gorgeous women in this film.
Yeah, a bunch of stodgy old dudes, but the ladies are hot. Kind of like...
They most certainly are. Now, there's a wonderful story on Ingrid Pitt and Britt Eklund and Diane Cilento. And it's a story at the end scene, which they're filming on the hill, and it's very, very cold. And PAs go up to Britt Eklund with a coat. She immediately takes a coat. Diane Cilento takes a coat. Ingrid Pitt says, well, is everybody else getting a coat? Is the crew getting a coat? No. Then I'm going to stand here and not take a coat.
Yep. And that is awesome.
Absolutely. I love the hair. Foreskins, I love it.
Snake oil. Brain. Heart. Let me guess, it's going to be summer off. I mean, you got to give the people of this town props. They really know how to close ranks.
Oh, absolutely. I love like the penis draperies and such. Now, this was a scene they cut, the apple orchard. You only see this, but there's a wonderful speech in the older and in the longer version. Ken, the music is just stunning.
Absolutely.
And my favorite line is coming up here of the whole film. You know, I've been watching Woodward, and you're absolutely right. It's a straight line with his mouth.
Like, and it does not move. It stays in a straight line the entire movie. Like, no lie.
And here we get to finally see Christopher Lee. Now, he was in a scene previous, but he's cut in that scene in this version.
Yeah. What I was thinking when you said that earlier, I was like, no.
Right.
Oh, dear.
I mean, now that you've seen it, like, you can't unsee it. He's just...
No.
I don't think children really were dancing naked, but...
It's too dangerous to jump through the fire with your clothes on. I love that line.
Yeah, actually, my cousin did that, and she got a rather creative nickname for the next few years. Firecross. She burned off all her pubic hair, as opposed to real religion.
And of course, Christopher Lee here is punching right back. This is the best thing in the movie. This conversation, and it really sets up the dichotomy, and it's wonderful. He's dead. He can't complain.
I'm sorry, but I loved this conversation the first time I saw it.
Oh, this is such a great...
And by the way, that divider in the background is just like chef's kiss. So fucking gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous.
It's not a set. It absolutely has to be someone's house, like their manor.
Well, it's a castle, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it is. Just to answer your question, apparently. Boom, timing. Typical mid-Victorian zeal. I like that. I mean, that place is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole island, honestly.
I love that line. A heathen conceivably, but not an unenlightened one.
Yes. I want that on a t-shirt. Yeah.
Kristen Copper.
Well, no.
And it's a rabbit.
That's actually a hare. There is a difference.
Okay, hare, sorry. Yeah, they have cut a lot here.
Yeah.
And they've taken this. This is actually near the end of the director's cut, this scene.
Yeah, I thought so, too. Oh, good. Dinner. Like, even when he grimaces, his mouth stays in a straight line.
See, the one thing is, he doesn't know, the one thing that is his downfall here is he doesn't know the pagan religion, because she wouldn't have been married, she'd still be alive, and she'd be waiting to be sacrificed on May Day. And if you know the Wicker Man, then you could figure this all out and see you're being played. But he doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And of course, I just gave a major spoiler there. But nonetheless, even I was thinking that when I was first watching this at 15.
And yeah, I was too, but that was, you know, part of it was... You're right. His whole downfall was because he didn't know about any other religions other than his own. And honestly, the townsfolk, I feel like if he hadn't have been like such a douchebag to them, they might have relented and like, you know, talked to him about their religion. If he'd asked questions instead of just, I don't know, freak the fuck out.
And personally, if he would have fuck Britt Eklund, he wouldn't be in the position where he ends up.
Honey. So, yeah, some of those pictures were pretty hilarious. Apples. Just for that, I'm gonna be here, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Now, I must say this. Do you know, I have never experienced a real May Day celebration. Have you, Rachel?
When
with
I was
your background?
Very young, so I'm not quite an expert on them.
But I wonder, and I've always wondered, how close this was to an actual May Day celebration. And from what I understand, I mean, in checking it and talking to people, it certainly is. It's a good representation.
And that's what I've always heard. Like I said, I remember snippets of it, but not enough to really be an expert. When we did all the Maypole demonstrations and stuff, it was, like I said, at Civil War reenactments we were at. So,
right.
a lot of Maypoles, not a lot of May Day.
Right.
She's like, you're just now figuring that out, dipshit.
Yeah, really. Really, he is somewhat sick.
Yeah. I guess fuck you too, buddy. I'm all about making skin suits and shit, but...
Mm-hmm. Of course, the eye is a very important symbol, too.
In a lot of religions, for that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Now it gets creepy. The mask just creeped me out, man.
The fish one. It's that fish mask that's weird.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Yeah, do you.
Yep, your plane's fucked. Somebody cut the power line.
Mm-hmm.
That should tell you something. They don't want you to leave.
Yeah, go follow the big, weird, creepy thing. Oh, it's the
yeah,
grave digger.
Yeah, now the creepiness starts to really start to,
is that a dragon?
To come in. And they're leading them. There's no doubt that they're playing them at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
And what I always thought was, why doesn't he understand he's being played?
That was my whole point. I was like, how is this guy a fucking police detective?
Yeah.
Like, a detective. You're supposed to be keen enough to figure shit out.
Right. But many of the extras here are definitely members of the community, not actors.
Well, and I would assume the reason for that is because, I don't know. Why is that?
Well, think about it. He used many of the locals to give it a local flavor, and he loved the faces.
Well, I was actually going to say it was because maybe they let him, you know, use some of their actual props, like their costumes and stuff, but if it's a religious thing, like,
I'm
they
sure
wouldn't...
that's the case.
Well, and I'm thinking that maybe the reason were employed specifically in that because he was actually using their religious, you know, accoutrement. And that's not something you're just going to hand over to an actor to use. So. Yeah. You notice how she cut the cake crotch first, by the way?
Yes, absolutely. If she's unconcerned, and it's her daughter, then maybe that's not the person they're sacrificing. You know, I mean, this to me is the one thing that I always felt just doesn't, I mean, it works perfectly, particularly the ending, which is one of the most thrilling, disturbing endings of all time, but
absolutely.
He needs to be smarter.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is the part of the movie where, as a kid, it almost started to fall apart for me. I was like, really? He's this fucking stupid? Like, of course, I was also the kid in the horror movies back in the day that was like, don't go up the fucking stairs and don't go in the basement. How stupid are you? You have to stay on the
basement. Yeah, don't go down to the basement. Yeah.
Don't follow bloody handprints down the wall into your basement. Yeah. Now, so moments like this always confuse me. Obviously not sorry enough.
Yeah, really.
Took a second, didn't
he? No, you had another chance there, kid. I love this. He's so being played. The apples, which of course are very, very important. And pagan rituals, and particularly English pagan rituals. There's that fish head.
Yeah.
Fish heads, fish heads, roly-poly fish heads. Sorry, I had to go there.
I knew you were going to go there.
Oh, man, I would eat that bread in a heartbeat.
2.5 seconds? Yeah.
I want that door knocker.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Why are all these coffins perfectly sized for a man of my height and width?
Oh, he's stepping it up.
Boy, he down that.
And have you noticed, for being the super prim and proper fuck that he is, I have not heard him say please or thank you in this movie for anything.
No, no, not at all. Now, again, another reason that you don't like him. And I think that works in terms of that you don't like him, and then maybe he's stupid because you don't like him. And you don't really care what happens to him. And then when it happens, like, holy shit.
Yeah. So you said in the actual accounts of this guy, or about this guy, that they were saying that he was just a douchebag canoe?
Well, that certainly is the scuttlebutt. But there is an actual disappearance of a English detective, or actually Scottish, excuse me, who went to an island outside of Scotland to search for a missing girl and then was never seen again. And actuality, the police searched the whole island, found a plane that had been crashed, but never found the body. So they always thought that he died in a plane crash.
Yeah.
But from this footage, I don't think he actually did. So what do you know about the Fool? And the whole point of the Fool in mythology. And it's not just the Fool or the minstrel is in many tarot cards, and they're the ones that really know what's going on. They're the ones that understand all this. And may I just say, I think Christopher Lee looks stunning. What do you think? Carrying that large loaf of bread, damn, shaped as a man. Again, the music is just stunning. I tell you, it seems like a lot of fun. Stonehenge, which isn't on the island, but that's okay. of course, this is a... So now they're at the beach. Now they give their sacrifices to the old gods. Now, if you're Sergeant Howie, you just got through the chop chop, so you're thinking you're okay. Personally, I think that's a waste, but that's me. And there she is. Here, he thinks he's got it figured out. Thing is, they're on an island. They're going to find them anyway. Oh, my goodness. The right kind of adult. You ain't getting away from this, Edward. We're not saying much because this scene is just phenomenal. Now, the song that is going to be played, Summer Is A-Comin' In, is a traditional song. And the preparation for a sacrifice has always been very loving. And this is probably one of the most erotic scenes in the whole film. And it's filled with nudity, of course. Now, as I said previously, the scene here, it was very, very cold. Now, I'll also talk about when he sees the Wicker Man, which we have not seen yet, what happens there. Notice his hands is very, very much, here you're seeing a lot of Christian iconography because it's like he's on the cross. Now, this whole scene with Woodward is on his own. He improvised most of this. And look at his eyes right there. He's like, oh, shit. Unbelievable. You're back. I didn't even realize you were gone.
Yeah. I've just...
You know, you can get into the studio and put yourself back, too. You know that, don't you?
You what?
If that happens again, you can go into the studio and put yourself back. You have access to the studio.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now, there is a YouTube here where he sees the Wicker Man, but it's the Teletubbies, and it's beautiful.
Oh, my God.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. It is gorgeous. So, he goes into the Wicker Man, and they set it on fire. And the animals that are in there were so scared they were peeing on Woodward, and he just escaped without getting seriously injured.
So what about the animal?
They were not hurt either, though PETA absolutely was incensed over this. But they did have people that let the animals out before they were burned, such as him, too. They had ladders in the back, and they had ramps, and they had people ready to bring the animals down. But one of the wonderful things here is now he's in the Wicker Man. What he does here is all off script when he goes into Psalm 23.
Oh, yeah.
And that was his choice. And it is just stunning. This is all from the Bible.
Oh, I know.
God damn, look at him. This is incredible, the acting here.
Yeah, and, you know, there's still that little bit of optimism in you that's like, maybe he'll get out, but does he really deserve it?
And of course, that's a good question.
I mean, it's such a tragic picture right there, but then you think about it, and he's like a straight-up religious zealot and a bigot.
Right.
And frankly, a mannerless douchebag.
Yeah. And of course, he decided to play it that way. He understood,
uh-huh.
And I'm talking about Woodward, his choices here as an actor.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was in the script to a certain degree, too. And he can sing.
I know.
He actually released, like, at least 6 or 7 albums in Britain.
Really? That's kind of awesome.
Oh, yeah. You know, Edward Woodward became one of my favorite actors, and I'll talk a little bit about it after the film. And here, he's just breaking your heart, even though he's a complete asshole.
Exactly. You know why it's breaking your heart?
Why?
Look at his mouth.
Yeah.
He's actually expressing. So who's Daniel?
I'm not sure.
Wow. Yeah, you can definitely see
the piano. He's mentioned in the song, but I don't know what the reference is in the song. And there's the sun, and the film is now over.
Holy shit. It's really, you have to watch the rest of the movie, which is kind of slow and weird, frankly, to get to the last 10 minutes of oh, my God.
Oh, absolutely. One of the most devastating endings of any film I've ever seen.
Yeah, seriously. Exactly.
And, you know, I've seen shit like Grave of Fireflies, and this movie, it just, wow. That's all you can say. It's hard to describe because you can't tell anybody the plot of the movie without telling them the entire plot of the movie. It's a really hard one. It's one of those few. I hate it when people say shit like this to me because I do not like surprises. But it's one of the very few things that I will tell people, like, you know how I am, but I'm going to tell you, you just have to watch it.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I can't tell you anything else. Watch it.
No, you can get the bare bones, and that's about it.
Yeah, well, basically, a police detective goes to an island where a sexually charged cult of botanists live.
Well, no, he goes to an island to search for a missing girl and doesn't get
right.
a lot of help from the locals. That's the way I would put it.
And see, like, that's the thing. If you give me a description of a movie like that and then say, but honestly, you just have to watch it, I'm going to be like, yeah, cuz. And then I'm going to take your DVD and I'm going to set it on my DVD rack. And then, like, 6 months later, I'm going to be like, hey, I forgot to watch your movie. So here it is. Sorry.
Yep. Well, you kept it for 20 years. Not the DVD, but the VHS.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, forgive me, but I did keep forgetting that I had it because the VHS were always on the bottom shelf.
Right.
So,
wonderful film. I again, I would suggest very strongly for people who enjoy, of course, Edward Woodward in this, to check out Callan. I also, in the 80s, I was a huge fan of The Equalizer, which he was on. And that's what really introduced him to American audiences. Also, Breaker Morant is just magnificent. And you want to check him on that, too.
Yeah. I just thought it was...
Go ahead.
I just thought it was a good, incredibly strange movie. And like I said, it was slow enough, but just, like, these odd things kept happening, and it kept, you know, me at a much younger age fascinated long enough to get to the end, and, wow, I had to sit there in stunned silence for a little bit. I was just like, damn, I'm pretty sure that's the first time I ever, like, went and sat, like, all the way through the credits for something, because I just, I couldn't move.
And, of course, Christopher Lee, I mean, you know, I don't care what Christopher Lee is in. I'm going to watch everything he's ever done, including Jess Franco films, which can be a little strange. But Christopher Lee, everybody in this movie, to the smallest role, does so well with it. Seriously.
They really, really do. I mean, even just the kid that, like, falls out of the closet bloody.
Yeah. Yep.
And
I do recommend that if someone can find the 108, 110 minute version of the director's cut, to please watch that, because that gives you a little more background. It also makes Sergeant Howie a little less abrasive. Not much, but a little.
Yeah, I'm kind of iffy on that one, but I found him to be equally as abrasive in both movies. And just because you give, you know, a little bit more background on why he's such a dick doesn't mean he's not such a fucking dick. But they do...
True.
But they do, I guess, make him a little more sentimental, and they do... make him more like the dopey fool. Like, he's
right.
A little bit more, like, there's a lot more instances in the director's cut of him just completely missing shit.
Right.
And, you know, it's almost like, how dumb is he? Like, I started thinking, like, maybe some nepotism issues here, and that's how he got his job as a detective?
Maybe.
Because he was just not figuring shit out, and for somebody whose job is literally to figure shit out, I don't know here. What kind of detective school do they have in the mainland?
Yeah, seriously.
So, yeah, I have always loved that movie. Not always, but ever since I saw it the first time, I've always been fascinated by it, and I think it is definitely not a movie for everybody, but one that definitely needs a lot more attention.
Well, it's now considered probably the greatest folk horror movie ever made. Certainly, these days, it's how people appreciate it and such is much more than when it first was released. The other thing, too, I found amazing about this film is, what is it? Is it a drama? Is it horror? Is it a musical? Is it this? Is it that? And all the disparate elements that are put into this film and then just seamlessly shown to you, and it just makes it even more amazing that this film works so well. Seriously. Yeah.
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just to let people know, on Tuesday we will have an ISF podcast, but that's still not set in the world yet. I'm trying to get that together. On Thursday we have tribute to Felix Sela. Felix was Cousin It. And also Tweaky from the original Battlestar Galactica, and my favorite Meskimata from the Manitou. And we'll be talking about him. Rachel, you have something coming up here in mid May, so why don't you tell us about that?
I'm thinking it's the 19th. I have to check back with my emails and stuff, but on the 19th, I have a lot of wonderful animators coming on the show. Charles Moissant, who is the head of Silver Phoenix Productions and has just too many things for me to even begin to talk about, including the fact that he is, still have that cold. He is currently creating a really, really interesting board game called Outer Planet Panic. And his, I guess, his client, best friend, I'm pretty sure roommate, just all around, you know, attached at the hip, would be Philo Barnhart, who came to pretty genuine fame at one point in his career by being the animator who was in charge of animating Ariel in The Little Mermaid. And now he lives a wonderful life, just touring around the conventions and making all kinds of drawings on commission for people. And he'll be coming on to talk with us about his time working with not only Disney, but Hanna-Barbera, and also what he's been doing since then, because I'm telling you, this guy is fantastic. He is always doing something new and fun. So I'm really excited to get them on the show and talk to us about illustration and animation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have lots more planned. We're going to do a show on Richard Rush and Gary... unfortunately had to go into the hospital, but when he comes back, we'll actually have a stuntman who was on the stuntman. Also, we are planning a Zoom podcast with Tony Burgess, the author of Pontypool. And we have an upcoming show on Monty Hellman, who passed away about 10 days ago. So we have a lot coming, but it's not set in stone yet. But we're getting there, and we've got other people coming on. Joe Lansdale will be back on at the end of May. We have a filmmaker set for the 21st by the name of Joe Lemieux, and he's a personal friend. He's the regional filmmaker out of Cleveland. So we got lots going on with Deviant Legion. Again, Rachel, thank you so much for helping
me
out on this on this commentary. Really appreciate it.
You know, any excuse to like chill in my office for a couple hours uninterrupted and watch The Wicker Man, like, just if this is torture, chain me to the wall.
Cool. Okay, well, folks, we want to thank you very, very much for joining us. We will be back next week with another one, but I haven't decided what it's going to be yet. But we'll do that next week. And so thank
awesome.
You very much for joining us, and have a good night.
Have a good night, everybody.
All right.